Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of the We're Not Experts History Podcast with myself, Sarah and James. Hi, James.
Hello, Sarah. Hello, listener.
Listeners. We have multiples, according to my stats,
which may or may not be correct.
Possibly. Well, to be honest, I wouldn't be surprised because it's your turn today, so...
Yeah, I'm slightly concerned. You've told me it would be exciting. I can't guarantee that.
Well, I was kind of just hoping because normally, so we don't really plan these things, but we kind of will at least know a topic. But on this occasion, I don't actually know what topic you're going to be talking about. So this is a total surprise to me. So what are we talking about? What are you talking about today?
So today, I'm going to tell you about a fella called Albert Cashier, who was born in the early 1840s in a place called Cloggerhead in Ireland.
Okay.
And like a lot of Irish people of the time, he emigrated to America.
Right.
He eventually found his way to Illinois. But around that time, the American Civil War started, so 1861. A lot of people would have joined up through patriotism. It's their country. Obviously, he's quite new there. I suppose he might have settled there. He liked the people. He planned to spend the rest of his life there, so he decided he was going to fight for his new country. So on the 6th of August, 1862, he enlisted in the Army of Belvedere, Illinois. He joined Company G of the 95th Illinois Infantry Regiment.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been... I imagine it would have been quite a stark difference when you've already gone from quite a rural community into the army. Because, I mean, you read people's diaries about what they did when they joined the army during the Civil War. Mostly it was drill and keeping things clean, and then lots more drill and limited food. And then I think someone described it as drill, 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 more drill, 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 lunch, drill.
Sounds fun.
It was quite repetitive. Yeah, very repetitive. But it wasn't long before the 95th Illinois Infantry were thrown into battle.
Mm.
And they were actually involved in some quite important, very pivotal and very brutal campaigns during the Civil War. And most of the campaigns were brutal. The casualty rates are absolutely ridiculous. Like 30, 40, 50%. Death in some battles, they're ridiculously high.
Mm.
Now, his regiment was formed the year he joined, 1862, and wasn't long before they were sent into the Western Theatre of the War, and they were involved in a very key, a strategic objective to gain control of the Mississippi River. And one of the most significant engagements, not just for them, but for the war, was the Siege of Vicksburg in Mississippi. And this lasted from May until July 1863. And it was Confederate stronghold, Vicksburg. And you look at photos, you can see the residents were dug in. They dug into the hills, so they were safe. But there was also, it was trenches as well. The soldiers were digging trenches to stay in there just to keep their heads down for a lot of it. And the 95th Illinois participated in this siege. And it was obviously not only are you facing fire from the Confederates and the harsh conditions, there's disease as well. The disease rate, once again, like many wars of this time, before and after, disease killed more people than the actual war.
Yeah, now,
Albert,
that makes sense.
Yeah, the disease.
Infections very, very and just...
Yeah, especially when it's the same with the First World War. You've got people coming from rural settings, they haven't really mingled in on outside their own family or outside their own village, and then they're lumped in with people from the city, so they haven't got the immune system to deal with the disease. And is that the same as the Civil War that it was with the First World War?
Mm.
Obviously, after the First World War, you had the Spanish flu as well, partly caused by this.
Yeah.
So the Union took Vicksburg, which is... very important because if you hold Vicksburg, you hold a very important part of the Mississippi River. And following Vicksburg, they were involved in the campaign of the Red River campaign in Louisiana, which was a very complex campaign, and it was unsuccessful for the Union. They didn't win that one. Later that year, in the 95th Illinois, a part of the forces that confronted a Confederate general called John Bell Hood in Tennessee, very famous general if you learn about the American Civil War.
Which I haven't, unfortunately, but...
I won't go into it. It's a subject I find absolutely fascinating.
Okay. Maybe you can save that for another episode.
Considering it was his 1860s, there are thousands of photographs of the people that were involved, all the really important people, and then just the soldiers, the battlefields, the places. Fascinating. I love it. Anyway. Okay. Yeah. So the Red Regiment and Albert were involved in the Battle of Nashville, December 1864, which was a very important Union victory because it crippled Hood's Army of Tennessee. And throughout these campaigns, Albert and his colleagues, where they would have gone through the same hardships and dangers, the disease, the poor diet.
Yeah.
Unless you could beg or steal food. And there's records of one army all but disappearing, but they're just not in contact with anyone. But while they're doing it, they're eating like kings because they're just plundering what they can find as they're battling. But again, as a Civil War soldier, it would have been... Your time would have been split up with very long marches, the poor rations, unless you can steal or beg for decent food, this ever-present threat of disease, which said claimed more lives than the actual battles did.
Mm.
And it would have been quite monotonous as well if you were in camp a lot of the time, because you would have been in camp a lot and you would have been doing your drill and cleaning your things and hoping you got more food. But days on end, and then all of a sudden there's a battle, and that would have been 2-3 days, and then you're going back to the monotonous life again.
With no Minecraft to fill the time.
Yeah.
What to do?
Why not? I don't see why not. I've never seen any record of them doing it, but it doesn't mean to say they didn't.
No, they might have done.
But obviously the war didn't last forever. It ended with a Union victory. The Confederate states were taken back into the Union.
Mm-hmm.
Slavery was outlawed. And all the soldiers would have had to go back to their pre-military lives. Not all of them did. Some of them would have stayed on.
Mm.
But that would have been quite a contrast of you've been around these people you've been with for years. They're your friends. They're close friends you've stood next to in battle.
Mm.
And now you've got to go back. As someone said, he went back to do battle with the corn. So basically he's gone back to a rural life, which is what Albert did.
Mm.
He went back to Illinois and he settled in a community called Sornamin. I believe it's pronounced Sornamin.
Okay.
And he started to forge a new civilian life, and he built a reputation of being hardworking and quite unassuming man.
Mm.
He took on a variety of roles.
Mm.
He demonstrated a very quiet... Industriousness. He worked as a farmhand, so that contributed to local agriculture. He served the community as a street lamp lighter, so that would have been quite an essential job to keep the streets lit at night. I would have thought that. I think that'd be quite a good job, actually. You're going, anyway, that's just my OCD. He also would take on odd jobs as a handyman. So he was building a reputation of being someone who was reliable, a very useful member. Even though he wasn't born there, they would have probably seen him as one of their own. He's chosen to move here, and he's shown that he's an integral part of the social fabric of this place.
Mm.
And he was just accepted as a Union veteran, which had carried a lot of weight at the time, especially after the war, probably carrying on.
Mm.
Into the 20th century, as he was getting older, that would have carried a lot of weight and put a lot of importance.
Mm.
And he, throughout the years, carried on taking part in events for the Grand Army of the Republic, which was quite a prominent fraternal organisation for veterans in the Union Army. And he would attend reunions and parades. And that would have also added to his reputation.
Mm.
He was a proud ex
military man who fought for the unions to the country they now lived in. And this Sornum in this place he moved to, he was there for over 40 years. And he would share his home with various families while he was working with them. So there would have been generations of residents that got to know him as Albert. Yeah. It's like a lot of places, if you said, oh, I saw Albert the other day, no one's going to say, well, who's Albert? They're going to know exactly who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was known as being the quiet, reserved. He apparently had a reputation of being kind and dependable, whilst also being slightly eccentric.
Right.
He was very private. He kept himself to himself. He loved his tobacco. He was known as having a quite distinctive, slightly stooped gait. But as I said, I imagine everyone just knew Albert. You knew if you needed something done and that he could do it, it was going to get done. Yeah, he was reliable. But as he got older, he continued with his various occupations. I think chances are when he was working with residents, it would have been the older residents who knew him for a longer time.
Yeah.
I imagine word of mouth probably helped him quite a lot. But he also remained quite an independent figure.
Yeah.
He was a small bloke. He only had a small stature, which wasn't unheard of at the time. I suppose diets were simpler then, so you were not getting the same nutrition as we were getting now. Obviously, we don't grow up as much as out.
No.
He was known as being stoic and had apparently a certain gruffness, which would have been a characteristic that they would have seen as being someone that had military service. He kept himself to himself generally, apart from when, I suppose, he was doing his bit locally, for the local community, or taking part in veteran activities. But as he got older,
married or anything like that.
No,
you haven't mentioned it. No, I didn't think so. You didn't mention it. So yeah, go on. Sorry.
No, but as you get older, you're now moving into the 1900s. He's a living link to this really important part of American history. So his kids who would have grown up don't remember the Civil War whatsoever. But you've got this person here who. The old residents know as Albert, and he fought in the Civil War, and the youngsters would have seen that the respect he had for this.
Yeah.
So in 1910, he had an unfortunate accident. I mean, he was working on a project for a state senator called Ira Lish, and he was hit by a vehicle which broke his leg. Now, he didn't say what sort of vehicle. I mean, in 1910, it could have been a car. Don't know.
Possibly, yeah.
The injury meant he had to be visited by a doctor and required medical attention, which would have been a little bit of an intrusion into a man who had quite a private life.
Yeah.
And the doctor attended to the injury. No public mention was made of anything unusual. It's just Albert's got a broken leg. He got over it, went back to his life. But his health continued to decline in the next few years. And he also had an issue with trying to be able to care for himself. So in 1913, he was admitted to the Illinois Soldiers and Sailors Home in Quincy, which was a facility built especially for older Civil War veterans who they needed that help to look after themselves. But it would have been, I think it would probably have been quite structured if it's built for soldiers and sailors, it might have been a little bit more familiar to him from his younger years. But he had care of the medical staff, and the particulars of Albert's history sort of became known a bit more. Obviously, it didn't bother anyone. He was just another war veteran amongst many, many other war veterans. I'd like to think it was all the people in there. It was quite comforting to them. You can sit and chat with people who went through the same things that you did.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, there was no PTSD then. I mean, the shell shock was a few years off. So, it's probably be quite therapeutic for them. But his mental state eventually deteriorated. And in March 1914, it meant he was transferred to the Watertown State Hospital for the insane, as they said then, which was in a place called East Moline in Illinois.
Right.
And in this new, more stringent institutional setting, he faced further medical assessments and a loss of his personal autonomy, which was for a private man would have been quite bad. And the more details of his life that he'd kept guarded for so long would have been exposed, I suppose, to a certain extent, that people working there would have known more about him.
Yeah.
But then in the 10th of October 1915, he died. He was 72 or 73, and he was buried in Sornemin, where he'd spent 40 plus years of his life, with full military honours. And he was dressed in his Union uniform. And they gave him a headstone with his name on it, Albert Cashier of Company G, 95th Illinois Infantry. And that's the end of that part of the story. But that's not all of the story. So when he was staying with a family, he became ill, and they nursed him back to health. And while they're doing that, something became apparent about him, which also became apparent to the doctor who nursed him when he'd broken his leg. Albert was actually a woman.
Do you know what? I knew that was coming. I knew that was coming. But I didn't want to ruin it and go, was he a woman?
Yeah, he was born as Jenny Hodges in Ireland about 1843.
Right.
But the early years of Albert's life are unknown. And we just know that he moved to the States and he joined the army. When he went to the place for soldiers and sailors, they realised he was a woman, obviously. But because she had done a bit. They thought, well, we're not going to touch your pension. You can stay. You just need to dress as a woman. Then, which surprises me a little bit, considering this is the early 1900s, I would have thought there would have been a little bit more arsey about it, but they were absolutely fine. As far as they're concerned, you've done your bit. You've earned your pension.
Yeah, doesn't really matter.
Then in 1977, as this becomes a little bit more known, I believe it was the people of Sornemin raised enough money to put both names on Albert/Jenny's grave.
Right.
Do
you think they would have wanted that, or would they have preferred to be known as Albert?
I think the secret's out. I think.
Yeah.
You'd like to think, yeah. I also like to think that Albert was pleased that people didn't care that he was a woman.
No, that he was accepted.
Yeah.
Wow.
But one thing I'd also found out is that there was between 500 and 1,000 women that fought as men during the American Civil War.
Yeah, he wouldn't have been the only one.
A lot of them joined up so they could be with their husbands. I suppose a lot joined up for the adventure. But I wonder if Albert joined up because he identified as a man.
Yeah, you just don't know.
If you spend most of your life living as a man, I imagine it's because Albert identified as a man.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it could have been that. It could have been for any of those reasons. There was a similar story. I forget the name of them, but there was actually quite a well-known doctor back in the day who was a female, but lived as a male just so she could become a doctor.
Right.
That's my phone ringing in the background. Apologies for that. Please, somebody answer that. Somebody answer that. For Christ's sake.
It stopped ringing.
House full of people, and it took, 60 seconds to pick the phone up?
About five. Albert or Jenny was not the only woman serving the American Civil War. If you look online, there's records of many, but the predictions are up to 1,000. And I suppose it was at a time where men had more privileges, they had more freedom than women, so dressing as a man would have opened more doors.
Yeah, and I think a lot of women probably would have done that, particularly if they were in a place where they didn't have many options. But like you say, there would have been some that did identify with being the opposite gender. You know, that's not a new thing, is it? That's
no.
But
it's only in recent years it's become a little bit more open. Yeah. People have been a little bit more open about
more
it.
More open about, which is how it should be, really. But
who's it hurting? No
exactly.
One.
And do you know what? Yeah. It's funny. You say, they didn't really mind, but. To be honest, see, when you think of attitudes back in the day and you think, they didn't like people that were in same-sex relationships, they didn't like this thing. When you say they, majority of people wouldn't have had that opinion. It would have been just a selective few, maybe.
Yeah.
So it perhaps would have been the law that you couldn't do this, couldn't do that. But majority of people probably would have been quite loose with it. And...
except, not back in the line, does
no,
it?
But you kind of think, back in those days, that wouldn't have been accepted and that wouldn't have, but it just...
But it's the fact that it involves his war pension.
Yes.
That and what made me think they would have been idiots about it. But they, absolutely fine. You've done your bit. You've
exactly. And it's kind of like, we don't care what gender you are, regardless. You've done what you needed to do. Doesn't really matter, does it? But
I should have had a look to see when they actually started allowing women into the American military. Yeah. I bet it wasn't all that long ago.
Probably not, no. But that I forget the name of that. That's what I was talking about before the phone rudely interrupted
me. The doctor.
And I don't, from what I remember, I don't think she identified as a male. I think she wanted to be a doctor badly, and that was the only way she could do it. And it wasn't until she actually passed away that they realised all along he was actually a she. But she was a very well-known doctor, and I think, made quite a lot of... Sorry, say that. Did you look it up?
Sorry, Margaret Bulkley. She adopted the name of James Barry.
That was it. But she hadn't have done that, if she had gone, I'm a woman, I can't be a doctor, the advances that she made wouldn't have happened.
No.
So it was kind of like... But anyway. Funny old
world. She died in 1865.
Yeah. So in and around then. And that was... And I think up until that point... she was assumed to be a male, and then it was only after she had died they realised, interesting. But yeah, it's funny. I just had a feeling that this was gonna turn out this way.
That way,
yeah. Particularly when you mentioned the small stature, I thought, well, that's a clue. Yeah.
And, but not uncommon.
Not uncommon, no. I mean, even when I look at army records for my ancestors, First World War army records, and it has their height. And, what strikes me is how small the men in my family were, But I guess that probably would have been about average. I mean, yes, you would have had people that were a lot taller, but... Most of the men in my family, they're all sort of in and around 5'4", like 5'2", and I think that's quite small, even for a woman nowadays. You'd say, it's a bit on the short side.
I think height restrictions for the Metropolitan Police in the Victorian era was 5'9".
A restriction, or...?
You had to be 5'9" or above, unless...
Oh, I was going to say, because wasn't it 6 foot at one point?
I don't think it would have been that high.
Because that seems tall. That does seem tall. For back then. I mean, now it's...
No, 5'9".
Or was it 5'9"? I mean, 5'9".
Every now and then they waved it, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, unless they were counting it with the hat, with the tall hat, if you were 6 foot with the hat on.
The custodian. It's called custodian's helmet.
What's it called? Custodian's... Why do they wear those? Custodian's helmet. We're going off track, but you should know this.
Another episode, I already know. Yeah, so once upon a time, they would have been flat, and the room was that you could stand on it to look over walls, but they're also quite hard. So if someone smashes you over the head and you're wearing one of them, that will take the blow.
Right. No, I
and
get...
Also, Yeah, I think also if you wear it properly, it makes you, you're meant to pull it down, so it's, it just covers your eyes, and it makes you stand up properly, so you stand up straight.
Right. So it wasn't, okay. No, I understand having a sort of a helmet type thing on to protect their head. It's just the fact it's so tall. You know, like the soldiers, why do, anyway, we won't go into that. Right. But why?
That's another episode you can do.
Well, I'm not doing that. I've got too many on my list. But, well...
More than me.
No, to be fair, no. I'm nowhere near caught up to where you're at. But I did have a laptop malfunction recently, so I do have an excuse to be quite a lot behind.
What was your excuse before that?
Just busy. Busy doing family history research and not podcast research. But well, that was interesting, and yeah, even though I kind of figured it out, it was still a bit of a surprise, because I knew there'd be something, and I was thinking, okay, there's going to be a twist, there's going to be something about this person, and I was thinking woman thing, but I didn't want to blurt it out and completely ruin your podcast, because can you imagine?
Yeah,
would have just killed the vibe. But but thank you anyway, and thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed the podcast. But just remember, we're not experts, we're just two amateurs muddling through history.